First up, we have James Carroll. He's a 22-year-old Cork native, currently studying creative writing, MA in UCC. He's previously published poems and articles in Motley UCC magazine. His favourite poet is Sylvia Plath, whom he takes great inspiration from. This event will be his first time reading his work in public. Welcome, James Carroll.
Thanks so much. We're so happy to be here tonight, Laura. Like a pure Gen Z, I'm going to read my poetry off my phone. So I have three poems for you tonight, which are all kind of interlinked and about the same situation that I grow angrier and angrier about as it goes on. So this is The Porch. I stand on the carpet that shields my bare feet from ice-cold tiles lying beneath me. I'm between two locked doors, the keys to both in my hand. I know where each belong, but my weak fingers have no movement intended. Behind one, I feel you watching me through the peephole, the way you have always looked at me until now. Your strong, warm hands press against the dusty wood, leaving a smudge on your tips when you inevitably pull away. Will we ever learn? Behind this door, uncertainty is your accomplice. If I were to open it, I do not know if you would maim or embrace me, nor do I know which I would prefer. A wall of glass acts as our second barrier. Air is stolen from my lungs by your predictably unexpected presence. No movement occurs. I fear you in the way a truck fears a fragile deer. Specks of you condense on the glass, your eyes like a lighthouse. The waves in them choppy, as though the moon has abandoned them. They call me home. You write your name in the condensation, add in your own surname, erasing the half of me I want to forget, and slotting yourself into me. Keys rattle, hurrying me for an answer. Behind me, your footsteps speak to me, first in shouts, then in a whisper, and then nothing at all. Before I can change the prophecy, your mirage dissipates behind the glass, into the midnight sky, up to the heavens to join the other prayers that I've made on my knees. I stand in the porch and I wait until the time comes for me to crawl out the window. This next poem is called Your Lover's Type. I like short and brunette. You are short and brunette, but you are just not a girl. They need to be funny. He almost crashed from laughing earlier, but you are just not a girl. They should be able to drive. You got your license 2 years before him. You are just not a girl. I want to pick her up. He picked you up this morning, but you are just not a girl. I really want to love someone. He loves you more than anyone. You are just not a girl. If your brain was in her body, I'd be the happiest man on earth. But I am not that lucky. My last poem is called Late Night Drive, Location Off. The first two lines of this poem are actually from a Sylvia Plath poem, which I can't actually remember the name of because I'm too nervous. You come in late, wiping your lips, ridding the taste of deceit from your immature mouth that speaks in mindless riddles. You turn your location back on. Does anyone care enough to notice, you wonder? Knowing the answer as you begin to strip, every piece of clothing tossed in the wash. She drove the first time, probably better than me. It's been years since I took a lesson, merely weeks for her. A younger and cleaner version, an echo. She sits in my old position, the same thoughts racing. Minds forgetting logic, hands ripping at clothes, and two bodies betraying one heart. I hate this girl, not because of any of this, because no matter how perfect I am, I'm incomparable to her, on a scientific level, if nothing else. As you boil your skin under the water, you know this is not about me or her. This is about you.
So much. That was James Carroll. Next up, I'm going to announce John O'Boyle. Is he here? Yeah, John the Best. So you slowly start making your way up, and I'll read your introduction. So John O'Boyle is a Cork-based writer, currently enrolled in the MA in Creative Writing at UCC. His poetry explores the dialectical between personhood and mythos. He is published in the Summit Avenue Review and the University of Minnesota's Women's Center. Welcome, John O'Boyle.
I have a couple tonight. I'm going to try to not read all of them. I apologize too, I have an ear infection. I don't know how loud I'm being, so we will see. Let's see. We will start with this one. It's called The Adverbial River. The Adverbial River, Lee splits itself in two like a diaspora. In North Hills, we gaze down upon the city, never to be breached by its swelling. On the south bank, a field mouse steals bread from two perplexed ravens, and I witness audacity juxtaposed with the transcendent. Somewhere between, I ask a real lock boy where the river ends and sea begins, wondering if salinity draws definite lines between bends and harbors. And he looks at me like I've traded feathers for whiskers and a tail, because what really matters is just that the water is coming, and he reckons always has been. Something unspoken about where it goes, and assumed about how it arrives there. This one is called Where the Poem Ends and You Begin. This one's actually a little bit older. I chose to read it because we had a conversation today in class about pulling knots through hair. And I thought of this poem. I performed it once at Marines. I'm going to do it again now. Where the poem ends and you begin, to push back against the rolling tide, fisticuffs with each phase of the moon, tasting death like blood-cracked knuckles, bones and flesh meeting ache and scar, a brazen grunt awakening beside me, the mist of a brawl hanging on your lips. This is not how you were supposed to taste. For must we still kiss in the low light of the morning, in the film grain of the bathroom, after I've washed away your sweat with my foot atop the drain, as the basin fills with steam and you long to return. You pound on the door and you call my name, and the lock whines. And the frame distends from the wall, and how I wanted to feel each body then, to bear the brunt of each of your blows, for you to walk back down to the river to find me, adrift from the witty turns of your similes, where I appear assiduous like a sailor of yore, one hand drawing currents into brackish waters, the other pulling knots through the braids of my hair. Thank you. I'm going to do two shorter ones and one little bit longer one. We'll start with a shorter one here. This one's called When the Grapes Begin to Taste of Blood. We'll leave the bottle of Carmenere uncovered overnight. Fermenting our reverie, we have lost the cork. Or like sap, it camouflages itself in unfinished grain, the oaken table reckoning. Next morning, I carry your tannin body from our bedroom hostile to hangover eyes. I could swing you about the kitchen, let your feet kick up, knock over the wine, disdain the wood at long last. But instead we sit in silence, warming our hands on cracked porcelain, staring at the wretched olive tint between us, as fluid the color of sewage escapes our palms. I turn away in search of a towel from the stench of rust in the air. Thank you. Long one into a short one here. The first one is called Winter 98. I was born in 98. That's where that comes from. The second one is called Brack, which is the Irish word for both speckled and trout. This is going to roll into the other one. We'll see how that works. Winter 98. I sometimes imagine it was the last year the river froze over, my parents trudging out along its dunes, bundled, hopeful, a month until Valentine's. I wonder if the ice was translucent still, if the cold was yet novel, if they could follow the cattails below, laugh at the two fishes woven between. If I was on their minds then, I must have been an evangelist to be raised reel in hand, and a match, and a contoured blade. But I am not the snow or sleet, the freezing rain made beautiful. I am not the cracking of sheets, the sting of sand awaiting beneath. I am not the emboldened tires, the way exhaust clings to a coat. I am not the turning into a skid, the pebbles caught between frost-bit tread. I am not the banks plowed into mountains, the streaks of piss and sod in the drive. I am not the humble right-hand man, the exhale of a chalice filling another. I am not the ashes of the Yule log in the stove. I am not the creak in the floorboards that summer, the rise of voices and my swelling of the womb. I was never the leather pressed between two hands, not my mother or my father, for I resolve myself ancient. Like the tides, rolling, 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 brack. We kept him in a house, in a pond outside the big house, where he could swim amongst swollen ankles and nibble at the golden reeds. And when the floods came and swept that house away, he eloped by coast to the river, and he waits there now. Yes, he is alive. He is alive. Thank you.
Could you pass that down to John, who just read, please? Thank you. Make sure he gets it. Thank you. That was John O'Boyle. And next, where's Leah? Is it Leah? I just want to make sure I get your name right. Is it Sohotra? So it's fine or it's right? Okay, next up we have Leah Sohotra, which she said is fine. Leah is also a songwriter whose singles have aired on RT and BBC. She's received reviews from Hot Press and Prague magazine. She's obviously in UCC's programme, and she's also had a short story published in O'Vale's 2019 anthology called A Journey Called Home. So welcome, Leah Sohotra.
So I didn't have a lot of new stuff I did get to share with O'Vale for the winter warmer. It was so nice. And I don't know, I think I'd rather read this. I don't know. I'm gonna do something different, actually. I was wanting to share a melody with you that kind of pulled me out of January. It was pretty rough for me. So I'm nervous. I know most of you. Wonderful. It's such a privilege to be here. Ego like a dirty magazine. Stun them, but you leave their fingers clean. Doesn't matter where your armor goes. Anger's just desire in different clothes. Feeling helpless in the house with mom. Makes a girl a sniper level shot. Mother, did you see I played my part? Mother, like a muzzle on a heart. Did you know devotion is divine? Burying her blood inside of mine. Winter came, it took its time. Ice in the eyes and heat inside. And the winds were high, and our heads bowed low, all in repent for wanting so. Let the passions wither in my hand, all temptation fall to my command. Mother, did you see me shun the world? Hungry like a searchlight on a girl. Did you know devotion is divine, carrying her blood inside of mine. Ah, winter came, it took its time. Ice in the eyes and heat inside, and the winds were high, and our heads bowed low, all in repent for wanting so. Couldn't stop, I stopped, I did a lot. Guess what woke the colder that it got? Dark and small inside its chrysalis. Something opens gentle as a fist. 16 eyes, its gaze immaculate. God, don't let her see any of this. I'll tell you what. Thank you.
Did I give you one?
I'm so sorry.
Thank you. Good job passing it back. It is much quicker, isn't it, now? Okay. Thank you so much. Wow, Lee Sartre, that was beautiful. Next up, I'm going to announce a poet who's from California living in Cove. Her name is Lucy Pereira. She has poems published in the Hellebore and the Honey Literary, among others, and her debut chapbook, From Here to the Ocean, is forthcoming from Finishing Line Press. Welcome, Lucia Prayer.
Hi, everyone. Thank you all so much for being here. Being in Cork and getting to write here has been such a dream, and being among these amazing, talented writers has been so inspiring. So I'm very happy to share some work with you today. I've got four poems. This first one is called High Tide. The river is moving like it has some place to be. The same current runs through me, veins coursing with urgency, out to open seas. A woman on the street wears a jacket as pink as a scream, closes her eyes for one beat, two, three. Rain beads in her lashes, sticky like sugar. She keeps walking, a screech of neon. I am seeking my own destination, somewhere that will carry me in its lulls, rock me gently in its ebbs and flows. An ecosystem where all things are born, where creatures can live without eyes, mouths, brains, all those complicated trappings of life above the surface. Glowing ethereal with tentacled calm, gelatinous bodies pulse one, two, three, a heartbeat without a heart. Thank you. This next one, agreed, January was a very long month, so this poem is called January. I begin a new year deep in the belly of something, missing my cue to emerge. Finally, chin tucked low in my coat, I find myself by the water, glimpse an otter twisting in the river, heralded by 100 gulls. She snaps at the air, somersaults and submerges. I scan myself for that fluid ease, find aches and pangs in its place. Back in California, the fire gobbles mansions, throttles the sky. Here, trees rumble forth from the hills and my breath shimmers. Frost descends. Stillness racks each crevice of my body, settles into the joints. In the eve of this decade, the liquid of who I am turns viscous, begins to set in its mold. The mattress remembers my shape now, our bed the only warm place in this house. You look at me and I put my shirt back on, feeling more naked than ever. As hard as I try, I am no furnace. This is all I will ever have to offer. Yeah. you just a couple more. This next one actually was just published online in Stanchion Magazine, so you can check it out there. Thank you. It's called Everyone's Waiting. And I couldn't tell you whether they're in the clouds or the flames or the spindly veins of a leaf. Across the dimly lit room, you ask, if there is a heaven, do you think we'll be there together? And I understand why you take offense at my lack of confident response. Because of course no paradise would separate us, but somehow I can't imagine heaven in the way that you mean heaven. White picket fences in the sky and flying babies and everyone's dead childhood dogs eager for a reunion. In my head, it's like this, your hand on my knee while you're driving, reaching over the gear shift, squinting against the glare, and the sea opens below us, dizzying and unfathomable. It's like we're a pair of trees touching limbs in a vast canopy, and we're a hymn sung by a pod of whales, and we're a fungus whose mycelium threads the breadth of a forest, and we're beads of condensation on the same foggy window. It's like you're a punchline and I'm the laugh, I'm the inhale and you're the exhale. It's like there's a road that keeps going and a playlist with no skips, and we never wonder if we're there yet, and when we get there, it's everything. Thank you. One. This is an older poem, but it is the last poem in my chapbook, which is coming out in October. It's called From Here to the Ocean, so I'm very excited for that. It's called Poem for the Walk Home. I'm trying so hard to be alive to everything. The days gape open, wide-mouthed. I tuck a few small truths in my pockets like pennies as quicksilver seconds slip over each other in rivulets. Early evening, the deer eat apple branches from my outstretched hands. Day breaks and recognizes me. Late morning, my chest is full of broken windows. In the surface of each passing airplane, I look for my own face. I am searching for something diamond to break my teeth on. Tonight, I will grin right back at the Cheshire Cat moon, reach toward tenderness, and wish that my palms could soak up this suffering. Sometimes it feels neon, and sometimes it doesn't. Even now, the universe never tells me no. Even still, I keep asking. Thank you.
Thank you.
Wow, thank you. That was Lucy Pereira. Can I ask you, Lucy, did you choose to live in Cove for any poetic or water-related reasons, or was it coincidental?
I found a house there, but it was fate.
It was fate. Okay, we love that's poetic. Yeah, that works. Okay, next up, I'm going to announce or introduce Jessica and Rose. And Jessica was awarded National Student Media Award as a feature writer of the year, Pop Culture and Arts 2022. She is a contributing journalist for Hot Press magazine. She was recently awarded the Miriam Cotter Award. Her published poetry is included in Green Carnations Anthology, Drawn to the Light Press, Issue 5, Cork Pride Magazine 24, and the Hide and Seek Anthology. Welcome, Jessica and Rose.
Hello. I really wanted to read here for all my life, so. I think I'm going to start maybe a little bit slower with something. Sorry. Perfect. Thank you. This is a sequence poem I wrote last semester, and one of my classmates told me that I seem to have an obsession with babies. And I think it makes sense because it was a bit of a rebirth phase. So this is the sequence, and it's called Teething. One, awake to find the softness of my hands encircling the tenderness of my bloated stomach, still mouthing out announcements that I would be having a baby girl, premature, and her skin would be rosy crayon pink. Peeling off remnants of starched sleep from the inherited cracks forming around my eyes, I wonder how much of myself is really in my control. If a mere period can cause my subconscious to brood for a baby, feather soft in my arms, dimpling like angel delight pudding, gazing at me with my eyes, my mother's eyes, my grandmother's eyes, my great-grandmother's eyes that have seen a world reshaped, morphed, easy as clay. Two. Whilst visiting the hospital, I am entrusted with my mother's wine-soaked, wine-coloured leather jacket that an ex bought her when she turned 22. My grandmother had two babies by 22. I look at myself borrowing the age they both outgrew, like how a child snoops in the adult section of the library, two babies by my age, only a baby herself. Babies seemingly withstand countless dramatic flounces to the ground whilst being kneecapless of all things. Jelly-legged and dough-brained, babies are primarily absorbent sponges. What would my sponge take from me? Might they poach the passion from me through their vampiric gums, with the acidity of my botched milk pass on to them what makes me alien? Would I ever get back what they took from me? Would my child forgive me for what I gave to them unwittingly? My friend in the hospital cries when she sees me. She's high on a cocktail of pain medication and reeling from the realization that the human body can be switched off and made lifeless so easily. Missing the boobs she consented to giving up and had dreamt about giving up since we were 14-year-old girls together. I bring her a string of cut-out memes I had saved from that time, and she gasps, "I remember, and I feel older than I ever have." Three. The moment is both comical and melodramatic, but it's poignant, and it's a necessary realization that I am no longer the scared child that I was, who was perceived of being perceived as anything other than not an existent perfect. All of us crammed into the claustrophobia of a convent school, only beginning to learn who we were once released from that compression. We were just girls, still partially milk-toothed, living within the shadow of every girl that had come before us, underneath the expectations of hovering mothers and Catholic grandmothers and overachieving sisters, and us just wanting to be enough, trying to meet every one of life's demands, to fill the void they couldn't fill, to live the life they couldn't live. Thank you. Okay, a little bit of context for this one. A tomamond, I found, is a lake burst. So it's when the ground kind of gives way to water and creates lakes. And medieval Irish poets used to write a particular brand of poetry about them. So this is called Tomamond for Autistic Shutdown. I am no bridge, veins and tributaries, finally drying up, my body lies, heavy as a lake. I'm up to my neck in stagnant waters, simultaneously at rest and in shell shock, fairy shrimp darting between the deftly floating ropes of my hair, looking toward their cysts of certain life in the follicles, murmuring encouragement, we shall both wake again. Every slight noise sends electric ripples ricocheting right down to the belly of the beast being me, my face swilling in and out of sight while the water level wavers. I am lying flat, my limbs separating like cattail reeds in resignation. This is not certain death. It's just another Wednesday, feeling my bones sizzling, dissolving. Suddenly they are laying me into the damp earth again, 6 feet freshly dug, perhaps hoping that this time my body submits to the soil, that the peat will reclaim its anomaly. Another nameless bog body, another unidentifiable witch doing her nation's duty. My country's history is built on buried secrets, mass graves, unwilling syringes bringing silence. What is one more undiscovered, unfathomable female generation? I am no bridge, but my presence can stop the natural current. Unspeaking, I succumb to the fatigue, letting body and brain unearth their convergence. This lethargic drowning requires patience, an understanding humans do not possess. Soon Sharon is by my side, nodding at me, tilting his paddy cap in greeting. He knows not to pry my clenched teeth apart in search of a euro for his time, his kindness, but allows some wet memories to be unwillingly washed from me, his merciful baptism corked fresh from the sticks. He's experienced my sedentary moments before and knows I am far from dead. This sinking paralysis, this amnesia, are in fact what allows me to live. So rest and feel no guilt. Forget and feel no pain. Awaken and rebuild. Thank you. This kind of of an angry one. But I feel like it's a safe space, so it's okay. Unmasking is a lot. I wrote this at a time where I was frustrated, because it's kind of like the five stages of grief, but you kind of, they're recycled over and over again. So here I get a little bit angry. It's called Pendulum. How can I give myself away when even I can't decipher the pieces of myself I'm holding? Hunks of red raw epidermis spliced open, cauterized wires spitting sparks to light up the wreckage. I hold myself, but I don't know who I am holding. So I let other people try to define it, try me, to have a taste. They take more than just a bite and give mixed reviews. Some like the stiffness of the silent lip. Another said its kiss was mediocre. One girl spat my eye out, its blood vessels bulging from the impact of her incisors, cheerfully claiming she could still feel it staring at the wrong moment underneath her tongue. I don't know who the child underneath this carnage was. Is she the echo I hear late at night? Her haunting call, pleading with me to take me home. We are there already, I say, we never left. Wasn't my fault? Could I have stopped it? The fear rattles around like the can in the honeymoon car, following my grief, tailing me through campus, slipping in between photo albums and the crack in the shower door. Was my fault for stifling her, the child I once was, even when I am not the one who forced a rubber mask over her head and told her to breathe as quietly as the rest of the other kids while she was suffocating. The words, "Don't you want to be good?" curdling in her ears. I kept my head down at an angle to allow a precious chink of air to seep through the wrinkled seal, the occasional puff of teenage cortisol acting as my vital vein, connecting to me to what my teachers called the real world, where I was told I would not survive without my rubbery prison. I bore the strain of a masked identity for so long that when I accidentally shifted the disguise ever so slightly, the world swooped with the debilitating nausea of a fairground ride, the resident clown on his break, dragging on a cigarette, grinning at me. His jaundiced, yellowing eyes lit up as a demonic kit-clack clock as the world ended. Now you were in the real world, breathing in this unfiltered nonsense and the stench of burning rubber, my mask blistering skin while disintegrating over my eyes. I'd forgotten long ago that I was even wearing it. Forgotten what my breath really looked like, uninhibited, as I tore it off to moan in chemical disbelief at the time I had lost. Hot, angry wretches wheezing themselves out of me like smog, an instantaneous pollution of the natural order. My incoherent howls ricochet, give her back, give me back. Reality spins and unwinds like I've been strapped to the waltzers. I'm screaming my throat raw as if I might find more suppressed secrets under layers of plugged tissue, another corked odyssey. I don't know who in particular I'm asking, because I think that the whole fucking damn world might be responsible. Once the mask has fully turned to ash, I make snow angels in the aftermath, surprised to see I can still leave a dent, or that I still possess a body, any solid form at all. My true reflection trapped, along with all the other masked little girls, as swimming portraits, burning into invisible oblivion within the warped funhouse mirrors. Thank you. One more, and it's happier, I promise. Okay, it's called Observer. There was someone waiting for me out in the dark. My vision blanketed with crushed deep blue velvet. I searched for a reason to believe that I would find a way out from underneath the smothering sheets. Skin piped thick with salt, sunken eyes beneath that sunken sky. The ebbs of the needle point, thin scorches of light, dimmed with every day I spent wading through the polarizing heaviness. I ached to succumb to the stiff facade of the sleep but offered, deterred only by the cannonball mattress pee of hope, digging into my subconscious, taunting me with whispers of not yet, drifting her hand hypnotically over the velvet. At each time I reached to be held, to be lifted, she pulled away the folds and the sheets, smiling, not yet, and hope killed the lights. I stayed to watch the lights flicker back on, somehow knowing that they would. Now out of that perpetual midnight, I continued to find chalky answers etched across my path, reassured by my realization that hope's hand was mine.
Wow, Jessica. Yeah, you. I know you wanted to do this for a while, but you were so ready to do it. You were so ready for it. That was gorgeous. No, not at all. It's just, do you know what? It's the fucking open mic list. It's them.
No,
it's actually. I'm only joking.
So I'm going to, our penultimate guest reader is Andy McNamara. Andy's right here. Hi, Andy. So Andy's writings appeared in The Echo, Dolly Bow, Cork Words 3, as well as online in Sledgehammer Lit magazine and Max Burns radio show. She self-published her first collection of poetry, Generously Curved, in 2023, and is currently doing the MA Creative Writing in UCC. Welcome, Andy McNamara.
Thank you. I just have the one poem tonight, and I crawled out of my sick bed to be here tonight, because I wouldn't have missed it for the world. So this is quite aptly titled, I think. The Porcelain Essay, after Anne Carson and one or two others. My heart is in the toilet, trying desperately not to sob into the silence, as the girl three stalls over tries equally hard not to fart. She came in just after me. Neither of us has made a sound since the jewel rustling the scent of denim and cotton. We are two strangers trapped together, bound by propriety and constraint, desperately trying to outweigh the other. Judging by the unacknowledged air of tension, both are rapidly approaching critical mass. Not gonna lie, it's getting awkward. Something's gotta give. 5 minutes earlier, I had been sitting in class listening to a discussion on Anne Carson pondering Emily Bronte and a glass essay. Two literary goddesses tramping about the countryside a century apart, moodily glaring out through cottage windows over the wild expanse of their loverless futures. The next thing I know, I'm in here. Bloody typical. Anne gets Emily, the moors and fresh air, and I get some Gen Z undergrad, the bogs, and a faint miasmic afterglow of a thousand hallowed backsides. A former lover once bought me a book of Anne's, inscribing it with, for the poet, the woman, the dreamer, setting out on her journey. I thought this was everything. So did the other two women he sent it to. Back in the bathroom. I suppose she could also be trying not to howl some unknown mystery grief of her own into the pine-scented void, but I dismiss this as unlikely, the way the chances of two random terrorists boarding the same plane are unlikely. Anyway, I've seen her before. She's doing applied economics or business studies, something financy. No, this is my life-defining moment. And some chit of a girl with her ridiculous Puritan attitude towards intestinal disfortitude is fucking it all up. All I want is a dignified little weep in this reasonably clean shitter. Is that really too much to ask? Anne had her heart crushed by love and so turned to Emily. The man I considered for about 6 years to be my soulmate once told me through a haze of blue smoke that love was for idiots who watch Oprah. If I'd ever had my heart crushed like he had by the woman before me, I'd understand. I turned to the grainy two-ply in the wall dispenser. We regard each other blankly. Tears fall like tiny water-filled condoms into my lap. But without the catharsis of heaving and gulping, it's all just slow drip dehydration. And after all, I am a mother. Sacrifice is my middle name. So I do what I've done a million times before. I pull myself up, dry myself off at both ends, and I flush. The air of relief from the far stall is palpable. Trudging back to class, I am left feeling cheated and moist, frustrated, like I've just had sex on the back seat of a Seicento with a man who drives a Seicento. Sinking into my seat, I'm hit with a sort of post-lavatorial languor, and so take a minute to reassess my fragile state. My heart is broken, yet still feels beats firm and resolute. Enough, it cries. Enough now of weeping and grieving in bathroom stalls. Maybe, it suggests, you are worth more like a changing room in Marks and Spencer's, or just higher standards in general. And like that, the storm within me passes. The air feels fresh and clean once more. Through the classroom window, I watch as my former stallmate bounces past on her way back to class. The spring in her step is infectious, and a feeling like hope rises once again within my breast. My heart is broken, but my spirit is strong. And so, until the next time, say cento, man, pass by.
We're glad you came out, Andy, tonight. Thanks for that. Brilliant. I'm going to introduce now our final reader from the MA Creative Writing course in UCC. I'm going to ask you for the pronunciation again. Is it, where is Angelia?
Behind
Angelia
you.
Is it
D'Souza.
Okay, Angelia D'Souza. Now, I have a problem with your bio. It says, is from Dublin, California.
You can change it to Cork, California.
Okay. We've claimed her. She's from Cork, California. She's sitting behind me. And she is, well, okay, doing a creative writing, you see. She's a recent graduate of Creighton University with a BA in Cultural Anthropology and English. Her poetry and fiction have been published in volume 13 of Mary Baldwin University's Outrageous Fortune Literary Magazine. Give it up for Angelia D'Souza.
Literally, how the fuck does one follow up after the glass porcelain essay? Oh my god, I can't. Okay. I'm going to read two poems. First one is called Watching, Little Love Letter to Cork. I'm from Cork, California. Don't claim Dublin. Okay. Watching. Bluebird threaded scarf, tasseling behind the accordion neck. Cherry plumed smoke, crisps, swells, disperses from chapped lips. Sudden dawn gull surge above the lee. Wine sloshed wandering onto courthouse steps. Beer belly bounce to the bus stop. Fishing line leashed greyhound foxtrots in garish fashion. Small hours gull swarm above the lock. Apple-cheeked toddler ambles, tumbles, is whisked onto hips. Mini-skirted girls huddle around wood-fired pizza. Ear-butted businessmen bundle into black backpacks. Puffer-coated people coast by coffee-shopped folk. Midnight masked gulls seek psalms in baked haddock beaks. Bleached brow furrowing at licked tobacco seams. Raindrop pearls burst in gold coin puddles. Cashmere scarved women sip, slice, swallow in crinoline tiered cafes. Wind wheeling bikes loaded in cubic configurations of delivery orders. Sun slivered shiver of velvet pub awnings. Plum rusted shadows fall on seething evening gulls. My reflection in Washington Street windows. Thank you. Okay, little context for this poem. It's called Greetings from Faber Lake, not a real place. When I was in elementary school, every time it would rain, this giant puddle would form outside one of my teacher's classrooms, and we used to call it Faber Lake and splash in it. So this is me kind of sending a postcard from Faber Lake to my old best friends from elementary school. Greetings from Faber Lake, 2008. The puddle outside Mrs. Faber's class ripples with each stomp of banana yellow and ladybug spotted L.L. Bean rubber boots. The sloped incline of concrete as it meets cracked cement creates the perfect puddle for us second graders to splash in, gravelly waves of taupe and grime washing over cuff jeans and polka dotted socks.
We thump and kick, plod and pound, our heels meet rain before it hits the ground. Behind us, the swing sets lurch and monkey bars creak, tan bark grinding into the soles of our friends' rhinestone-studded Skechers high tops. The slides swerve and spiral, the seesaw submits to our version of gravity. At recess, we are the self-appointed architects of hysteria, the gymnastic engineers of foursquare and kickball. We cavort and contort, we hopscotch and jump rope until we wear our souls down to sweat and rubber. What falls in Faber Lake is an oil spill of Crayola and crazy art, a kaleidoscopic membrane between us and its murky depths. And when the bell rings, we retire and cease our exploits, at least until lunch. Dear C, how long has it been since I last thought of you? Some days you cloud my skies purple, simmering with thunder, the way an orchid holds rain in its inkblot petals. In the hourglass of my nostalgia, I kneel beneath the sandfall, catching droplets on my tongue. Do you ever flip to the back of the yearbook and skim your fingers over "Have a good summer"? Have the pages gone stale? My gel pens don't write the same anymore. I miss you, A. P.S. Are you still friends with V? I don't think she liked me all that much. Was it jealousy, as bristled as a coyote? Or were we the prickled ones? Did you ever talk about me after I moved away? Or was I simply a relic of second grade? P.P.S. I can't recall the name of that game we used to play. A mutation of tag, a hybrid of hide and seek. What was it called? Oh well, it'll dawn on me in a few years. Let me know if you find out. Dear I, do you remember our forgetting as clearly as our becoming? We could have been sisters, with our black hair twisted from the same root and our brown skin seared by the same sun. Your shadow was my grave, bitterly dug in a competition I never signed up for. The best way to leave a friendship is to set a timer for a few years and let the rain dissolve each lucid secret, each ditzy nickname, each tangerine peal of laughter. When I saw you again, I didn't recognize myself. Take care, A. P.S. Do you still play Club Penguin? Do you ever... Do you ever log on to Pop Tropica? Cool math for kids? My old username and password lies tarnished in verdigris. Is our bond worth the resurrection? P.P.S. I'm gonna reread the Westing game soon. P.P.P.S. I still remember when you spoiled who the killer was for the whole class in fourth grade. Can you believe it's been a decade now? So it goes. Thank you.